Dropping the Needle. You're listening to Dropping the Needle, the podcast where all music from all genres is discussed. New releases, classic albums, rediscovered music, signed and unsigned. No ass kissing. Just two guys talking about music. Here are your hosts, Michael Brandvold from Michael Brandvold Marketing and Mitch LaFont.
Listen to this. I don't want to bother you, but listen to this. That's Rex Brown, Mark Zavon, and Brian Tishy.
Cool.
Doesn't that sound cool? So, I mean, this is unmastered. I haven't brought it to mastering yet. Mastered it.
I like your the artwork, though. Is that the artwork you're going to use for it? Mm-hmm.
That's the bass player of Pantera thing. Isn't that cool?
It's good to have all this collection. Because everybody, who's not a Kiss fan?
Tommy plays on this one. Denander plays on Little Caesar. He does cool getting with John Dawkins too. Eyes of Love is an Eric Carr demo that his sister sent me.
That's pretty cool. Really
cool, actually. Yeah, in fact,
they're not, it doesn't seem like they're the normal Shandy. Who did Shandy? I like that.
That one I don't know if I'm going to use or not, but it's Scott from LA Guns. Scott Griffin.
Scott Griffin. Yeah, I like Scott. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. But this is that's a rough demo that he said don't play for anybody. But he said that he's gonna master it up and get it sent out for next week. Not bad.
I love it because you know that was the album that was one of their most underrated albums, unmasked. I think you know.
Well, there's a version.
There was such a transition period for them. Ace was still in the band, yet
as a guitar player, this is the one you should love. Listen to this guy's tone. Yeah. 21-year-old kid. Who has apparently been called the next Joe Bonamassa. Not the singer, but listen to this breakdown. I'll give you 10 seconds and then we'll get started. Hell, I'm bothered all day. Listen to this.
Should play for Oriente. Oriente would love this.
And he goes into Miss You by the Stones. And then back into Sure Know Something. Pretty cool. I love this.
And this is, because this is your baby, this is your project.
I know.
So now, how are you going to interview yourself for that? You're going to have to get someone to interview for you for this one, I think, you know?
I have.
Could I be a guest interview?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
But I've done morning drive time in Montreal 3 times.
Yep.
I've done morning TV in Montreal once. I've done Spain radio, Iowa radio, so.
Okay. Maybe we'll have to get you on Big Rock Show or All Access. Yeah. So you heard about All Access and stuff, yeah.
And
I'll be the interviewer becomes the interviewee.
We'll do it right now. I'll just say that. Hey, no. But you know, it's been so successful that Walmart wants to pick it up. I got a call yesterday. They said they want to take the 10 best songs and do a $9.99 Walmart thing.
And they said, advertise it for.
They said they think they can move 200,000, and I went, oh.
Oh,
okay.
That's great.
And it's a cancer hospice in Montreal. And my goal is all the money goes there.
Would it be the... That's really good. That's the ultimate in...
Well, my wife's father died. You know? My wife's father died this year in January.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. But this is how we turned it into a positive.
Yeah. Getting the inspiration.
Getting 250 musicians, engineers, graphic artists to come together... Make an album, give back to them. So,
good.
I'm happy.
It will. I mean,
and these are all unmastered. So whatever you hear now is sort of the unpolished.
Yeah.
They'll sound better. They sound great now.
They sound great now.
I know.
in today's world, I mean, in so many ways, it's the unmastered music that actually grabs your attention, because everything is so perfect now. If you listen to the radio, everything's tuned to the exact note and the frequency and all this. The drums are all slotted perfectly. I think it's the blemishes on the records.
Like as a character.
Yeah, at least what I grew up on. I mean, the best example is all you have to do is listen to the opening notes of Ziggy Stardust with David Bowie. And it's not just out of time, it's out of tune.
Right.
Everything's like the bass and the guitar.
First Black Sabbath album. It's full of errors everywhere.
Well,
but that's what makes it great.
That's the age-old question. If Too Fast for Love was made in 2013 with Vince Neil's voice not being a semitone off key, you know, it was perfectly done, and all the sort of the doubling of the guitars was all tightened up, and everything was just perfect. Would it be a successful record, or would it have launched them the way they did? And I don't know if it would have, because it might have just made, okay, well, that's a cool rock band. But that album that had so much character, because of his voice being just a little bit off.
Oh, they're not going to turn on air conditioning on us.
Yeah, they probably will. That's what we do. There would be no interview that would do, birds flying in, whatever.
That's all right. So let's get started. So. And by the way,
you got a good sound. You have a good level of sound, you know.
And they're talking. So many people wanted to be part of this, and I can't go past 40 whatever songs. I mean, obviously that's a lot of songs. We might do a volume 2. And same thing, money to charity. So if you want to be on that, let me know. I'd love to have Casablanca or you or whatever. Do whatever. Hard Luck Woman with an acoustic guitar.
Does it have to be Kiss? Alice Cooper has a lot of.
I'll take an Alice.
Has a lot of songs too. No, I'm just saying, if you're going to make a concept record of a certain particular artist, those are all Kiss songs.
Right, because I'm doing a Kiss tribute. It's 40th anniversary.
Yeah, but pick another artist that has that wealth of catalogs, and right off the bat, Alice Cooper seems to be like one of them that a lot of people give instant credibility to. You know. So, well, obviously, who's not a Kiss fan, and in the same breath, who's not an Alice Cooper fan?
Were you a Kiss fan growing up?
Yeah. I actually had the Love Gun, insert, the Love Gun with that, I think it was a POW or something like that. What was it?
The little of a POW.
Yeah. And I cut it out, and then I actually made a mobile out of it. It was a piece of string hanging from my wall, I think that was the first Kiss album. My mom wouldn't buy me Kiss Alive 1 because it was a real picture. So they were smart. In 1977, of course, 77, they come out with Love Gun, and it's an illustration. So it's very Spinal Tap. It's just a little twist. It's not really them, standing in front of all these naked women. It's a picture, an illustration of that.
Yeah, right, that an artist came up with. I just got Love Gun in today. Tony Harnell, Mark Kendall, and Tommy Denader, and it just showed up at 11 o'clock.
Okay.
And I'll play it if you want. So I guess we'll get started.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was the interview.
No.
I thought we should wrap right now.
He has been taping. Can we keep this stuff?
Yeah,
I mean, you didn't say anything that was...
I say everything I say, unless it's completely blasphemous or I give away a spoiler alert.
Because I'd actually like to keep this stuff, because that's a good discussion. So let's start off with your box set. I mean, first of all, how does Ryan Roxy come up with a box set? I mean, what's on there, and
Well, I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I wanted to collect all the demos, all the collaborations with all the cool guys that I've been working with over the years together, and put it in one place for someone, because...
Put it in one place, though, did you add guitars? Did you remaster it.
Right, you wanted everything.
An even sound.
Because I wanted everything to sort of top out and sound consistent. And
fair enough.
And we were going from 24-track masters to...
Pro Tool.
To 8-track... to 8-track demos. There's one segment on the fourth CD, which we call it the Roxy Tapes, which was one of this project I put together called Bye Bye Kitty. I recorded the whole thing in the bass player of Candy, That was one of the first bands I was in.
Right.
Jonathan's Garage. He had a Tascam reel-to-reel 8-track, so we recorded all those tracks there. And, you know, the only thing that had left from those master sessions was the cassette that we mixed it all down on. So, you know, we went from, you know, a cassette tape, and it, first of all, we had to find a cassette player, you know, and we actually found one in Sweden where we mastered it. We found a really good quality cassette player, and it was basically
a radio show.
One run. No, because it was like, guys, I don't know how many runs we got of this, the tape might break at any minute, so we put it onto digital format, and then we remastered it, and yeah, I'm excited about all those tracks that are on there.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, you spoke of Jonathan, the Electric Angels. What a great album that was.
Thank you. That was one of those bands that I think, you know, we sold about a dozen records, maybe 13.
I bought one. I have it.
Oh, I think I've shaken everyone's hand that has ever bought one. But at the same time, it's one of those albums that lives on and on. It's got a lot of pedigree, if you will, to it. We had Tony Visconti, who's worked with all the T-Rex albums. David Bowie did string arrangements for Paul McCartney and Wings. I mean, he's just such a
master.
Yeah, he's one of those iconic producers. Tony Visconti produced it. It was my first real recording, my first time out of the States, first time going to Europe. We recorded the album in the UK. A lot of firsts for
what was
for
that Atlantic?
That was on Atlantic Records. And we recorded the album in London.
You know,
Soho.
I've got a song right from it going through my hair now.
Yeah.
Been keeping my head above water, trying hard not to drown.
Keeping my head above water, you keep holding me down. I think one of the strengths of that album, too, was Jonathan's lyrics were really cerebral.
Yes.
You know, he made you think a lot. And one of his heroes, lyrically, was Elvis Costello. So I thought Shane, our singer, did a great job of taking Jonathan's lyrics, which were the ton of them, fitting them into, because, you know, he had a lot of ideas to fill in a 3-minute sort of rock and roll pop song, if you will, and get the idea across. And to this day, people say, yeah, I just listened to Electric Angels the other day, I still have it in my CD.
Well, it's actually a timeless album. It doesn't sound like an 80s, you know, it doesn't sound, you know, it's not like putting on A Flock of Seagulls or something. It has a life to it.
So we basically recorded Appetite for Destruction with 1/1000th of the sales.
Yeah, pretty much.
Great.
But how was that?
Good, I mean, for us.
How was that for you? Because now you've been doing this for 30-some years. How was it getting that first contract and that first budget and that first getting in the studio? I mean, do you remember any of that, or were you just like...
No, I wasn't too drunk. I was definitely drunk, but...
Not that drunk, okay.
I was a young 20-something kid, just like literally living that rock and roll dream. But I do remember all those firsts, and they are imprinted in my memory banks. Hopefully they'll remain there for a while. But yeah, the first time you get a publishing deal, the first time, you know, you get a record deal, all those other bad firsts, the first time
you get screwed over, the first hundred times
you get passed on by a label, all those things seem to fade
away. The first time you go to forensic accounting, all those great firsts.
Well, I do remember coming to New York City with all the guys. We moved there. I remember there being about maybe $800, $1,000 in my account, and I was like, I thought, okay, this is it. I'm gonna do something with it.
So you were a rich rock star, and you had $1,000.
At that point, I felt I was. But then we got the record deal, and we got a publishing deal, and at one point, we actually did have an amount of money in the bank. But then I remember leaving New York. Literally, I went to the ATM, and I could not withdraw $20 because that was the minimum you could withdraw out. And my account said $5.25. I said, I think it's time I leave. I think it's time I go back to Los Angeles and play with as many musicians as possible and, you know, just get my crack. Because what I will always say is that Electric Angels, being the first real band.
Yeah.
It gave me all these first, it gave me that foundation, the work ethic. We practiced our butts off. It gave me that foundation of playing, of what it's like to play the club circuit, of what it's like to tour in a van with, you know, seven or eight smelly guys and just, you know, really work it. So when I went back to Los Angeles, I started playing as many people as I could and using the contacts that I had built up before and hopefully not abusing them. I always say, you know, you use your contacts, you don't abuse them.
Absolutely.
And
did you, by the way, go buy the album in the store, or did you just get, oh, I got a promo copy? Didn't mean, did you go pay that $10 to get the album?
Yeah, I had to be one of the first, one of the only 13 that bought the actual album. No, I did. I did go to the store, because it was the whole process of back in those days. I mean, unfortunately, that experience doesn't really exist, or it's very rare, that you can go into a store, hold something tangible.
And, very different. You know, now you just, your new album, you go to iTunes and you download it while you're making
the
coffee.
The experience is not, it's not the same. I think for my mom, it was a big thrill. She went and bought every single copy and ordered more from a small record store in Northern California. So I think maybe somebody called up the Atlantic office and says, we're blowing up in Pleasanton, California. Well, I don't know what's happening.
We're hot in this market.
they're really blossoming. No, it's just my mom buying copies of the record. Don't worry.
So back to this box set. So you got all these masters and you put it together?
Yeah, well, I wish I had a copy of it. Darn it, I have. Well, there's a picture of what it kind of looks like.
Yeah, I'm gonna go buy one.
You can superimpose it.
Absolutely.
Why did I not bring that with me? Well, that's the true professionalism of me. But I do have those. And
I've got three of these albums. I don't think I have the Roxy tapes.
The Roxy tapes you definitely don't have, and I know that you don't have Two Sides of Every Story, which was the last Roxy 77 record we put out.
But you had sent me a whole bunch of demos of...
We put it out digitally, and we had nothing tangible. So that's why I said I wanted to put something together that's tangible, that you can, like, listen in the same way that I used to listen to Cheap Trick records when I was, you know, when Cheap Trick took over my life, and I would basically do homework to them, fall asleep with the big old Pioneer headphones on my head. It was an experience. You took out the album cover, you listened to the songs, and while the songs were playing, you were dreaming in your head, you were visualizing becoming those guys on the actual album.
I used to sit there and try to write out the lyrics.
Try sitting there trying to learn a song back in those days with a record needle, and you know how many copies of Eruption I went through, you know how many copies of Van Halen.
Was Cheap Trick the first album you ever bought? Like, what was the first album you took your own money out of your pocket? Not your dad's money, not a birthday gift, your lawnmower money that you went down.
Yeah, to be honest with you, no, I was, it was a little bit younger than that when I got into the whole record buying phase, but it was the Osmond Brothers.
Osmond.
Don't you laugh either. The Osmond Brothers made an album called Crazy Horses.
I would not have any idea.
Now, if you listen to this album, I swear to God, I don't know which Osmond it was, maybe it's Tito, I don't know.
There's a Tito, isn't he a Jackson?
Of course. There's Alan Osmond, everybody knows Donnie and Marie Osmond. Maybe
who?
Not up here in Canada,
who?
But
I don't know.
They have
I don't
their
know
own
Osmond.
TV
no, no,
show.
I know those Osmonds.
But one of the Osmond brothers, I swear to you, has a voice just like Axl Rose.
Really?
If you listen, Google it right now, Osmond Brothers Crazy Horses, tell me that's not Axl Rose. Okay?
What's the song like? Welcome to Utah.
Oh, wait. We'll stop the interview. I'll wait.
Okay, let me punch it up on YouTube.
So I was into that, like kind of, I guess that would be called bubblegum pop back in the days. Tony DeFranco and the DeFranco family, Bobby Sherman, David Cassidy, the Partridge family.
Okay, that was hot. So you, so you used to buy 16 magazine and Tiger Beat.
Well, yes.
Yes?
I don't know. I mean, probably. I mean, we were probably lying around or something like that. But no, I used to, you know, honestly, Circus magazine. That was where I found out about all my rock and roll stars.
That was actually the best. You had Cream, you had Circus, and Hit Parader. Circus.
Yeah. As a little kid, Cream was almost intimidating because they actually had Boy Howdy beer, and they had, you know, they had these big ads. But Circus magazine was like kind of like the
and
kids
it was laid out in a nice little news section. And then you had your interviews, and you had the ads in the back. No, that was great. I love Circus.
Do you remember the back pages? Who the guy was that wrote the back pages? There was a column in the back pages, and it was cool because when I moved to New York, I ended up becoming friends with him. Insert name here.
Was it Nick Boycott? No.
We could do a good edit on this one, and we can go, bing, there it happened.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Lou. His first name was Lou. Back pages with Lou.
Yeah, Lou.
We'll figure it out.
Let's see, Lou Ferrigno, Lou Graham. Oh, God.
Louie.
So
basically, when people ask me, you know, who are your heroes, I'd always say Keith, and they'd assume it was Keith Richards, but it's like, in reality, it's Keith Partridge, you know? Moving from there, when I went down to Los Angeles to visit some friends, I was at a party, you know, very young kid, basically sitting in a chair like this, and all of a sudden, out of the stereo comes Cheap Trick at Budokan. Side one kicks off.
Well, who had it on?
It was at a party. It was like a kid's party. And you know, everybody else was in the back. I think there was a keg there or something like that. And it was for a little bit more older kids than I was. But I was just sitting there, and I was glued to that chair all night. I must have listened to side A, side B, side A, side B. I must have listened to that record probably four times that night. And then I went out the very next day and I got it.
Yeah, so. And what's remarkable about that is that it wasn't supposed to be released in North America. That was a Japanese product, and it kept being brought over on import, that the record company said, well, why is all this money going to Epic Japan? Let's...
I love when stories like that happen. Yeah. And then,
the
you
fans
know,
demanded.
Fast forward to this tour, the very opening night of this Alice Cooper Marilyn Manson tour, guess who comes up for School's Out? Rick Nielsen and Robin Zander come on stage. Yeah, they came up on stage and sang School's Out with us in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and they just killed it.
So growing up in those days, obviously Alice was already out there, and Kiss was out there, and Cheap Trick was out there, and now you've played with those guys. I mean, at any point do you sort of pinch yourself and say, what's going
on here? I'm pinching myself right now. No, I, like I said, I always feel blessed. I always feel blessed to live the life that I said I was going to live when I was a little kid. Said I want to be those guys on the wall, and or at least do my best and see the world playing music, and I've been able to do that. But at the same time, it would have been different if these guys that I met were like uncool. Right. It would be cool, but you know, like sometimes you meet guys, oh, I wish I wouldn't have met him. No, like. Pretty much every idol that I've met has surpassed me. Like, they're funnier than I thought they would be. They're more intelligent than I would have imagined. They're like, you know, very topical. I mean, you hang out with a guy like Alice Cooper, you have to constantly be on your toes.
That's the thing I want to ask you about, because when you're talking about meeting people, he had this image, and you know, back in the day he had a drinking thing, and then you meet him now, he couldn't be nicer.
No, I can guarantee you.
I mean, he is absolutely
whatever
an angel.
Day, whatever era it was, you know, even when he was drinking, he was just as sharp as a tack. He always has just as witty.
Public image was that he's some kind of like monster and welcome to my nightmare. Same thing with Gene Simmons, by the way. People think that they're these.
Helps sell some records, doesn't it?
But they're so.
You sell that dream, man. I'm telling you. I see it on this tour that we're doing with Marilyn Manson because. You know, there were so many rumors flying around before. You know, how's this tour going to work? How's it going to be? Is Manson going to get, you know, completely destroy Alice? Is there going to be fights? It's like, no. There's mutual respect. And honestly, I'm, you know, so far on this tour, I'm completely blown away by the professionalism of which the whole Manson camp has taken the tour. They're killing it every night, which is you know, because it's a co-headline tour, we are going on after Maryland
tonight.
Every night we go on right
after.
I think there's a couple shows where we don't, but at the same time, it is billed as a co-headline tour. But let me tell you, they do such a high energy, high level show, and he knows, you know, how to get into an audience's head, how to get into a person's head so well that it gives us so much a higher bar to shoot for, to
compete. You're only doing an hour of these shows. You're not doing the whole...
We're doing 75 minutes each. It's 70, I'm
oh,
telling you.
That's fair, 75.
Yeah, 75 minutes set with
a nice
each
number.
Band.
Yeah, it's a nice
Let me
number.
Tell you, they get, I think they get the whole show, because there's not any props that are... They use all the props, so there's nothing that's sacrificed. So between Manson's show and Cooper's show, you'll definitely get your money's worth, because you see a lot of the shticks that make both those bands work. You know, there's the classic guillotine with Alice. Then there's the classic podium with Marilyn. So you can see they have their. And there's more that each of them have, but like I'm saying, they both...
How are the crowds reacting, by the way? Because, I mean, you got sort of a younger audience from Maryland that, you know, they've always been...
Here's what I think about this tour. I think it's sort of the sleeper hit of the summer, in the sense that there's dedicated Manson fans, a younger fan base that we're seeing and digging on, because it's just like, hey, look at these... kids really getting into Manson and into Alice. They've heard about Alice, you know. They've heard, like, who's Alice, and now they have the opportunity to go see him if they haven't already. And the older Alice Cooper fans that have obviously heard about Manson over the years,
right.
They have a chance now that they haven't seen Manson before to come check it out in the whole bill. So I think there's curiosity on both ends.
Yeah, you know, as a Cooper fan, I've seen Manson a couple of times. I don't buy his albums, but he puts on a great show. I mean, it's a great show.
This is a show.
I mean, you get a full visual.
It's truly a generational bill, because between if you think about the Manson generation and the Cooper generation, and even the younger Cooper fans, that you can see like three different generations of people coming to the show.
Now, speaking of different generations, you left Cooper for a little bit. You had to see your own little generation grow up, and how has it been being back? I mean, the last time we spoke, which was last year, you'd only been back for a few months. Now, you know, is it still
as exciting as it was the day I got the phone call to say, hey, Roxy, you want to, you know, come back and join up with the tour? Because I look at it like this. I've been in the game for a long time. I've been in the trenches of rock and roll, I like to say.
Absolutely.
I've played with about 100 bands, you know, 98 of which you've never heard of.
Sure.
But you do know a couple, and Alice is obviously the premier guy. He's just sort of, you know, when I drop that name in any interview, any sort of door opener situation.
It's recognizable.
It's instant credibility.
Right.
So I look at it like this. I was one of the lucky ones. I was able to watch my kids grow up, you know, and now they're 8 and 10. They're still growing up, but they have their own agendas now. They're much, much more so than they did a few years ago. So, and they're much more understanding about, hey, what Papa has to do on the road, what Papa has to, you know.
And Alice is good about that too. He doesn't run you for 300 dates in a row. You do a little run here, little run. I mean, so you've got a chance to go home.
The touring the last couple of years has been consistent.
Alice does 100 shows even per year, right? That's sort of the magic.
That's kind of like, I mean, the way it's done, like I told you, back in 96 when I first joined up with this, it was a one tour gig. You know, the management told me, he said, look, he's going to test the waters and go out on the road for 1 year. Let's see what happens. And we went out with the Scorpions that year. And he's been touring every summer since then.
Yeah.
All the years that I wasn't doing it, all the years that, you know, I took off to see the kids grow up, the years I spent with making the record with Slash, every year Coop has consistently gone out and been slaying it. You know, he's been.
When he's off the road, are you doing your own band, or you just go home and say it's time for the kids?
No, the thing is, I don't like to slow down. I got a lot of different projects, like the Roxy Box that I put together last year, and I put that out. Was just a prequel to what
But that you can do from home and still have your home life and
exactly. Right? But I recorded a new EP while we were on this last break. So that new Roxy 77 EP will come out later on in 2013, maybe on the back end of the Alice tour, maybe early next year. But we're calling it the AmeriSuite EP.
Right.
And that's
now, is the EP. Is that sort of conceptually because albums are not really relevant, or they're not, it's not worth making it, or is it just a time constriction?
Here's the thing. I had about half dozen, you know, six or seven songs. Right. I think that's what's going to end up on the. It's a long EP, if you will. But I had these six songs that I felt were strong enough and made enough of a statement that maybe I wouldn't feel the same way a year from now recording. I might come up with a whole bunch of other ones, but these ones I felt were really worthy of being put out. So let's make something out of it, and let's have something for people to talk about.
That's an interesting point. Is it worth making an album? Because now with iTunes, you know, if you do six songs now, and then next you do the tour, then you come back to them, now you can just put them out.
That is a debate that I don't know whether where the right answer is, because there's some people on one side of the coin say put something out every 3 months, put a single out every 3 months, so you're always in the public eye.
A lot of the artists I've interviewed say that's what they do: four songs, EP, boom, iTunes, move on.
But at the same time, that experience of putting out, you know, a 10, 11 a song, whether it's a concept,
but that experience, an old guy thing like you and me, or does a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old care about a 12-song experience?
Isn't
their experience a one-song download?
The world's attention span has definitely gotten smaller, but that doesn't mean to say that the tradition of how we experience music can't be passed on to future generations. I know that for a fact that you can do that, just because I see the type of kids that we see at the Alice Cooper shows.
Right.
They've definitely been influenced by older 70s, 80s sounding albums.
But your oldest kid is 10.
Yeah.
Mine is 10.
Yeah.
And she wanted the Shake It Up Disney album, whatever. And I said, you want me to get the whole thing? It's $9. She goes, no, I just like that one song.
Yeah.
Buy me just that one song. So,
well,
who's right or wrong? I mean, should daddy buy the $9 album, or do I just get the? I mean, I guess it's changed, right? I mean,
does it change, or is it cyclical? Because it seems to me like in the 50s there was a lot of pop star, you know, pop
idols, that one single,
you know,
right? The one hit
wonder. Beatles started out as a singles man, but then, you know, the Beatles made that. What was that record called? But they made Sgt. Pepper's, and it kind of changed the world of the concept album and the whole experience.
True.
And I just feel that, you know, every once in a while there comes a band that puts out an album that you should listen to. That album,
yeah.
That album, you
well
need.
I just had one like that dropped in my lap, that band Airborne.
Yeah, their new album,
Black
like
Dog
that?
Barking. You know, I listened to it because I had to interview them, and it was just bloody brilliant. I mean, it's a great, and it goes from song one to whatever 11 or 12, and you need to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, put it this way, I'll try the experiment. With Roxy 77, we're going to be putting out the EP, so we'll put out a small batch of songs and, you know, do videos every few months, a release a video every couple months from that EP to keep that, the, you know, sort of the word out.
Is there a YouTube channel where people can see these things?
Yeah, right on. If you go right to RyanRoxy.com, you have a very easy to navigate.
Yeah, so let's just start there. RyanRoxy.com, and then
RyanRoxy.com.
It's from there. The links to Twitter, Facebook, and
everything's there. And then there's one tab that says Roxy TV. Click on that, and you'll see all the different. I've compiled all the videos, or pretty much most of the videos that I've done, been a part of, And we'll release something new every few months or so. Now, with the other band in Sweden that I play guitar in, a band called Casablanca, we had an album.
That was a great record, by the way.
Thank you very much. Called Apocalyptic Youth.
Yes.
We have a new album coming out later this year. The single just came out now, and it's called Hail the Liberation. That, the album is called Riding the Black Swan. That album, I feel, is one of those albums that you do need to listen from track one to, you know, to track 10. Yeah. It's you know, not a long album, but it's definitely something that goes through the emotions. I wouldn't say it's a concept record, but you
can... But there's an ebb and flow.
Yeah,
like right.
And a lot of people said that about the first Casablanca record, The Apocalyptic Youth. They said, you know what, I don't just listen to the single Downtown. I like listening to that album from, you know, the way it flows from track one to track 11. So I was like, okay, well, let's keep that tradition going with Casablanca, and that's how we're doing that. So I'll let you know how it turns out. Either way, we gotta keep ourselves in the
game. So there's no off time for you then. You keep going.
Well, and obviously I'm
Gibson.
I'm doing tons of Gibson work. You know, during, you know, before, during, and after the show. You know, when we go do an Alice Cooper show, I do a meet and greet where, you know, people can come and check out the guitar and take a picture.
Oh, you're doing that tonight too? Picture, like every show?
Take a picture with the guitar. It's called the Rock and Roll Parking Lot.
Right.
Yeah,
you send me all that stuff. Yeah.
If you go there, you sign up for it first. It's like, my whole feeling was like, let's meet the fans before the show. Everybody wants to get backstage, but you know what? Backstage, 9 times out of 10, except with this Manson tour, because it is kind of crazy.
There's nothing
back
going
there.
On back there.
No, it's crazy back there now. But usually when we do a backstage run, it's pretty calm. And so why not me and whoever wants to come with me that's in the band? We'll go out to the crowd, meet them, take some photos with our, you know, with our guitars, sign some stuff that they brought. And so we get to meet them and find out the sort of vibe of what the crowd is going to be like before the show. Gives us inspiration, hopefully puts them in the frame of mind, like when they see us on stage, like, hey, I know that guy a little bit more.
Yeah, it's changed from back then. I mean, now with the Twitter and the Facebook, there's more of this.
There's
more
connection.
We're all on the same team now.
Yeah. Well, that being said, I do think that there is, and you must maintain, when you're on stage, an unattainability. You must have this sort of, you know, that is my guitar guy, that is my lead singer.
Right.
Yeah, that's what, you know, sort of being a rock and roller is all about. That's what inspired me to want to become those guys, is that there was this, man, I wish I could do that for a living.
Right.
And when you're on stage, you be as badass as you want. But when you get off that stage and you come down to real life and we're sitting talking, well, look people in the eye.
Right.
And
it's gotta be larger than life, and then it's gotta be
larger than life, and then
personal straight connection.
Yeah, that's a perfect way of putting it, because that's what I try to do with my whole whatever it is that I'm doing, you know, playing guitar, promoting myself, surviving another day as a rock and roller. When I do these Gibson clinics, people are surprised. They go, wow, you're very knowledgeable about the guitars, and you know, you make me want to sit down and practice more. I go, well, that's the whole intent. Me doing
guitar. I have to inspire you.
Yeah,
that's the point.
It's not so much, you know, anyone can go on the internet and look at, you know, what pickups and what string gauge and what this and that, all the technical parts of it. It's something else to go and go, man, that, yeah, I could write a guitar riff. I can write a guitar riff if I, you know, on that guitar, it's a cool tool. Cool, I'll go do that. I'll go sit on my couch and practice, you know, 20 extra minutes.
That tone, yeah.
So that's when I know I've done a good job at the clinics, or I've done a good job at a show, is when people, you know, either write me the day after or come up to me after the show and they say, you know what, you inspired me to go and play some more.
And that's where, that's the important thing about music, inspiring you.
Yeah.
You know, because otherwise,
it's what I do.
What are all these things?
Oh, this is pay it forward. When you come to the one of these rock and roll parking lots, you're gonna get, and that's the thing. Of course, you can come and get the CDs, you can come and get, you know, we have merchandise and stuff. If you want it, you order it beforehand and I'll give it to you and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, you're going to get stuff when you come to one of these rock and roll parking lots. You're going to get two things. You're going to get, and I'm going to give them to you now.
Oh, great.
You'll get one of these plastic bands that has Roxy 77, that has Enjoy the Ride on it. That's sort of my mantra.
Yes.
Life being the ride, enjoy the ride. So you got that?
Thank you very much.
Then you have this one that's
Pay It Forward.
Pay It Forward. And it's a an organization. It's called the PIFExperience.com. If you just Google Pay It Forward, and you'll get to their main website. It's a guy named Charlie that's put this together. He's collected, I don't know, you know the concept of paying it forward.
It's basically
doing something nice for someone without any expectations, you know, just because you can do something nice for someone.
That whole Kiss tribute that I was playing, all these people are doing something out of the kindness of their heart, but they're going to get, you know, karma.
It'll come back.
Good karma.
Well, the idea with this is that this is just a reminder that, you know, if I've done something good, let's say I've done a good show, for, you know, and I've played a good show. I've entertained you for a while. I have paid it forward, maybe inspired you to go and play some more guitar. So you now have this wristband that says pay it forward, it reminds you. So when you do something nice for someone else, you can pass it on to them.
Right.
And then therefore,
thank you very much.
The Roxy 77 one, you are free to keep. You're free to have that. The pay it forward, I want you to pass it on. It's because who knows, someday, if everybody starts doing, imagine the way the world would work if everybody just did a little something nice for everyone every single day. It would be such a better world, and you don't have to have a ton of money to do it. You don't have to feel like you're like this big giver and someone else is receiving.
Yeah, but I'll give you a perfect example, and you know, I go back to this Kiss tribute. You know, Rex Brown, Bumblefoot, they decided to do these songs for me for free. They had never met, they played, they liked what they did. Now promoters want to book them to do shows as that unit.
There you
and
go.
And so they've gotten that, and then if they do the shows, and I hope they will, they'll go out and entertain an audience, they'll put a smile on these people's faces. Like, that's
eventually
what it
is. Go on and on. His whole concept was like, let's make a small dent. We don't have to change the world with this huge, concept. We can do a small little thing. Every one of us can do a small little good deed every single day. It doesn't matter, you know, that's Charlie's whole mantra. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, a good person, a bad person. Just do something that helps someone else out each day. And, you know, it's going to help you out in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we've probably gone on about half an hour. A little more than that.
Wow, this is the extended version.
This
I love
the extended
it.
Version, but that's
we
great.
Always, whenever we get together, there's a lot to talk about.
There is. There always is.
Well, hopefully, it can.
I ask such great questions.
You do. You know what? Wait till I interview you
for my thing.
Yeah.
It's gonna be fun, actually.
All right.
But so, RyanRoxy.com or just Google Ryan Roxy and everything.
Yeah, it's RyanRoxy.com. That's the easiest way to get in touch. And I even have my email on the site. A lot of people go, is this really your site? And I go, yeah. If you really want to talk to me, you really have something to say, I'm one of those guys, I'm very approachable.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Hopefully you come at me with real talk. You know, and most people, 99.9% of the people, you know, when they contact me, it's about something real. So, you know, it's a good question. It's fine. I mean, you know, you don't need to know my favorite, you know, food or my favorite color.
Speaking of your favorite,
which is obviously silver and black.
We doing the Raiders again?
We don't have to talk about the Raiders. I mean, we're still gonna probably have to. We're gonna have to probably lick our wounds for another season, but we're on the right track back. You never know what
I'm a Redskins
happen.
Fan, so I can't really be boasting too much.
Well, if RG3, you know, remains, you know,
healthy.
Unbroken, yeah, you guys are going to be dangerous.
But we have Kirk Cousins? We have Cousins, who's a nice guy, but yeah.
The NFL is one of those things. For those of you that don't watch National Football League, it's just one of those things you do get obsessed with. And because it is a shorter season than other sports, it does seem like it's more of a monumental
thing. Well, it matters from game one. And listen, in baseball, there's 162 games.
you know, the first 2 months of the season, it doesn't really matter.
There's only 17 weeks with the bye, 17 weeks of actual your team.
And you look at hockey and baseball, well, then hockey, almost every team qualifies for the playoffs. In football,
football, only the strong survive. And the last couple of years, I'm surrounded by a room with orange and brown. I feel like I'm in Cleveland Brown area.
Yeah, it does look like a strong. All right, so remember, get Sunday ticket. No, but
No, babe, you want to talk football, you want to talk rock and roll, you want to talk the guitars, you want to talk about the, my different projects, go on RyanRoxy.com and
email you.
Yeah, or just go there and explore the different options that are there. Oh, yeah. The last thing I need to talk about.
Get the box set.
No. The last thing I was going to talk about is that's the other thing you get at the rock and roll parking lot is you get this. I did a bunch of video online lessons.
Oh, nice.
So this company Play Along, they treated me right before this tour. They said, you know what, Roxy? You did all these lessons. Now we're going to help you promote it. We're going to give you a bunch of cards that have a code on the back of it. When you do this rock and roll parking lot thing, you pass these things out, they can get a free month. It allows them free access to the entire site for a whole month.
Oh, nice.
So you know, if you're thinking about playing guitar, if you're curious about it, come to one of these rock and roll events.
Do you do the Skype lessons and stuff too?
Lessons I've tried before, it's still not smooth enough to give a one-on-one lesson. I do one-on-one really exclusive private lessons every so often, but to be honest with you, the time schedule with this tour is so tight.
Rigid.
But that's why these online lessons are good, because they're short 3 to 5 minute lessons. If you're curious about learning the guitar, go check it out. That's the link for this is on the site as well with RyanRoxy.com. And if you really, really want that free month of guitar lessons, email me and I'll just tell you one of these codes. I'll give you one of these codes on the back.
Yeah, that's kind of cool actually.
Yeah, why not? I'm offering it right now. I will, in fact, what I'll do is I'll just say my code on there and then I'll exit out and give the code with, you know, just a picture.
It's just a great picture. Here's a picture for you this time. Well, thank you very much.
Always, Mitch. Always a good time. And look, you got one of these.
I got to pay it forward. I got to enjoy the ride.
And you get one too.
You'll get one too. And perfect. And my son just turned 7, so life this week's good.
Let's bring it on. See ya.
And I got to go buy this box set actually.
I'll get you one.
Hello, this is Bumblefoot from Guns N' Roses, and I just released my own award-winning gourmet hot sauces, from the mild cherry bourbon Bumblicious to the over-the-top Bumblefucked. So, if you want to get Bumblefucked, visit bumblefoot.com for more information.
You've been listening to Dropping the Needle with Michael Brandvold and Mitch LaFon.